Now, as he's working with his family and teaching his children, didn't he guide many of them into the areas that they seemed to be interested in and nurtured them in that area?
Yes, he did. First, I want you to remember, this is an enlisted man in the Air Force. I said before that he built a wall to build a bedroom for all of us to sleep. He also always had a library. No matter where we lived, he'd build a library. Just get plywood and saw, and he'd build a library. When you move a lot, you don't want to carry a lot of things, but he always had books. And he would not just have any books. He would have classic books, great books, philosophers and Shakespeare and a variety of, you can imagine, the best books. He'd always have a collection of 100-plus books that he would carry everywhere. And all of his children were given reading lists. This year, Jim, during the summer, I want you to read these 5 books. And it wasn't that we had to prepare book reports or something to prove we did it. If he said you're supposed to do something, we did it. So we'd read these books. We're never tested, never questioned. We just expected to do it. And it turned out that great books are a joy to read. And I actually look forward to it. Very few people could say that when they're in grade school, they write a book report about a 14th century English philosopher. And the book is 1,000 pages long. I did that kind of thing because my father made that kind of book available. The other thing that was so unusual, not just the library, the way he trained, my father wanted me to be a business person someday. I don't know why. I don't know what he saw in me. But he said, Jim, not only do I want you to read these books, I want you to regularly read. And he couldn't afford it, but he still bought it. Subscription to something like Forbes magazine. And the newspaper, he would always save the stock market section every day of the week. And on weekends, we would chart stocks. He would have other investment books available that I was supposed to read. And we would talk about his portfolio of stocks that he owned. Now, it took me a long time to figure out that my father had no money and he had no portfolio, but that didn't mean we couldn't pretend. So we had this, what I thought was real, portfolio of stocks that were in fact pretend. But if real, as poor as we were, if we didn't invest right, it could make us poorer. I was very focused as a young man on picking the right stocks and understanding why, what industries, what stocks, all of that. First in grade school and middle school. By the time I got into high school, I figured out he didn't own any stock, and so we didn't play the game anymore. But I was learning those kinds of things. Each one of his children, he was able to see something in them that caused him to push them in a direction. My older brother, it seemed clear from the very beginning he was going to go into military, and that's what he did. One of my brothers is a CFO. He was trained a bit like I was. My two sisters, one was pretty clear she wanted to be a mother like my mother. That was terrific. One of my sisters showed a lot of inclination to teaching. She became a teacher, and my father guided each of us in a very unique way. If you think of the workload of that many children, finding that kind of talent, pushing them in a certain direction, is an amazing, amazing man.
You know, we think of wealth now in terms of money, dollar signs. But you were wealthy then.
Oh, very much so. I said I lived in a privileged environment.
There you go.
And people said, well, what do you mean by privilege? You're as poor as church mice.
Right.
And I said, no. I was privileged to have a father who cared, who had great faith, who took a great deal of time and interest in each of us, had great books for us to read, taught us discipline, showed us great examples. I mean, what a privileged environment that is. That you can't buy.
He encouraged you to be on the debate team?
He did.
Why?
Well, my father was also fairly blunt. That came with the military service, too. He was not one who pulled many punches. By the way, I want to talk about punches, too, because that's part of what he also taught us. My father said, Jim, if you're going to be successful in business someday, it's not just about picking stocks. You're a bit of a mumble mouth. That's what he called me, a mumble mouth. I had a speech impediment when I was young. Had to, have somebody help me with my speech. Couldn't pronounce certain letters right. And I was always a little bit shy because of that. He said, I can't see you standing in front of a group making a speech. You're very, very smart, but you're a bit timid and you need to have confidence. One of the ways you can accomplish that is get on a debate team. And I said, I don't want to do that, Dad. I do not want to be on the debate team. I have no interest in that. It gets in the way of my other studies, and I do not like speaking in front of people. He said, that's exactly why you're going to do it. He said, son, this is not a request. This is one of those orders. And when you heard the word order, you knew that was not debatable, even if you're going to be on the debate team. It's not debatable. So I went on the debate team, and regardless of how I interviewed today, whether I'm articulate or not, at that time, I was a very good debater. And almost immediately, we made it to the state tournament. My partner in high school was a young man named David Griesemer. Griesemer and Gallagly. How about that for a couple names? Long and complicated. He went straight to John Hopkins Medical School. He was a concert pianist when he was in high school. He was an absolute genius. Between the two of us, we were quite the debate team. We always went to the state finals, and we never won in the state of Colorado. We always were beat by a Denver team, but we did take a multi-state tournament first place, and he was just a wonderful young man to debate with. But my father made me do that.
Well, you surprised me, because I thought you were going to get there and be very nervous and very shy, but bingo. Did you overcome that pretty fast?
Yes, because one of the things I said was I was only number two once. Well, if I'm going to do something, I'm a very competitive person. And one of my father's sayings is, if you're going to do something, be the best at it. You know, if you're going to do it, be the best at it. And he said that time and time and time again. So if I was on the debate team, his expectation was not to just participate. His expectation was to excel. So when he said, you're going to be on the debate team, Jim, I knew what that really meant.
Right.
I have to tell you this wonderful story, because it wasn't just my father. When I went to my first state tournament, I got my shoes out of a trunk and all. I did not have a sport coat. You're supposed to wear a tie and a sport coat to the state debate tournament. My mother made it for me. My mother was a seamstress.
Did you like it?
It wasn't stylish, but I loved it. The collars were a little thick.
Did you feel funny wearing it?
I did and I didn't. I felt funny wearing it because it didn't look like anybody else's suit or sport coat, but it also didn't look like anybody else's because nobody else's had that love.
Yeah, that's great. My mother made some shirts and the collars were always too big.
You know? Yeah, you know, people used to make things in the day, and my mother made that sport coat. The second time I went, they were so proud of me that they actually went to Montgomery Ward's and my father bought one on sale for me. It was the ugliest plaid sport coat in the world. But that was a big sacrifice for him to do that.
I should say, as you tell this, you tear up a little bit as you tell about it.
Yeah.
It's a great story.
Yeah, it was great.
He was a good athlete, too, wasn't he?
He was. He was a football coach, baseball coach. We had our own baseball team. If you have eight boys and you have a father who's a good athlete and a baseball coach, a football coach, guess what we had? We had probably the best family baseball team ever. And people used to come play the Gallagly boys in this dirt lot out in front of our house. Our house was very modest, and the nice thing about growing up in a house like that is sometimes there's vacant lots around. Well, we turned that into a baseball field. We played hours on end when we were on summer break.
Punches. What did you mean by punches?
Well, punches. One of the things my father did was, when he was growing up in the Depression, he and his brother found that one of the ways they could make some money, besides baling hay and working on the farm, was to go box. Boxing was a popular sport back then. So they both kind of went pro on boxing and got paid to go fight. His brother, Gene, was a Golden Gloves, and my father, I don't know. My father would never talk about himself much, so I don't know what he achieved. If he achieved something, he'd never tell us anyway, so we never ask. He's a very modest man. But he loved boxing. And he wanted either my older brother or I to be a pro boxer. And like I said, if you're going to do it really well. My older brother was too big and too awkward to be a good boxer. I was small, really fast. My dad said, you're good enough to go pro. And every Christmas we get a new pair of boxing gloves. About every third or fourth year we get a new boxing helmet. It took a while to wear those out. I used to hate to see Christmas for one reason when I was young. All the furniture would get moved out, and my older brother and I We'd probably go 10 rounds on Christmas Day with our new boxing gloves. Not all at once. Just beat the pulp out of each other. And he was a lot bigger than I was. So it wasn't much fun to be the little guy, but I can tell you, he never knocked me out, but I knocked him out multiple times, and I was a pretty good boxer. My father said I was good enough to go pro, but at some point when I got old enough to even think about it, he said, that's not what you need to do.
Your father was how old when he died?
He was in his 60s. You know, one of the things that I look back and regret is because we were in the military and because we were poor, we never went to the doctors. We could never afford to go to the doctors. We just got better. You know, whatever we got, we couldn't go get medicine or whatever. I guess in the military it was free, but we just never went to the doctors. In fact, when I worked all my career until the last year I worked, that would have been something north of 35 years, I never had a sick day in my life at work. My father had something going on, and he thought he had pneumonia. He went to the little country doctor and kept diagnosing him as, well, you still have that lung infection and you have this. A year later, he finally went to a doctor in town, turned out he had cancer. If he would have gone earlier, probably would have saved his life, but it's just something he never did. And so, unfortunately, by the time he started getting treated, it was just simply too late.
It had to be tough then.
Yeah, it was.
To lose him. Down through the years, does he sit on your shoulders every once in a while? Talks to you?
You bet.
Yeah.
Wingtips and all.
Yeah.